You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up after 4, our guests will share household safety tips and things aging adults can do to prevent injuries and keep their independence.
First, White House officials are calling for schools to end zero-tolerance policies, policies that require things like suspensions or court referrals for certain rule violations.
Last week, Attorney General Eric Holder and Education Secretary Arne Duncan released a document with suggested discipline guidelines for schools. They said that zero-tolerance policies make students feel unwelcome in their own schools and disproportionately punish African-American students.
Thina Robinson-Mock is with us. She's project director of the Advancement Project's Ending the Schoolhouse to Jailhouse Track campaign. Thina, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we get to the wider issue of the school-to-jail concept, what do you see as the problem with zero-tolerance policies in schools?
Well, the biggest problem is they make zero sense. They are punitive disciplinary measures that basically say if you commit certain violations, you're out. And what out means is you're out of school. You're suspended, expelled, removed from the school environment. The challenge with that is that what we're finding is that students are being sent away from the classroom, sent out of schools for very minor infractions. And so they're missing they're missing invaluable instructional time. And they're not in the classroom to get the education that they need.
The idea when zero tolerance came around, as I recall, was that schools really wanted to keep out weapons, drugs, prevent violence in the schools. Is there any case to be made that it made schools at least a little safer?
I mean, there's a cause, you know, for action if there's something serious. You know, we're not suggesting that you shouldn't take acts of violence, weapons seriously. But what we found from the data is that there are over 3 million students who are suspended each year for minor infractions. And so the numbers just simply, they don't reflect this larger issue of a problem that warrants zero tolerance.
What kind of minor infractions are you talking about that are getting kids suspended or expelled?
Well, we're talking about things like being tardy to class, truancy, possessing a cell phone, being out of uniform, school uniform. It's not common sense. Kids should be in school, and it seems pretty ridiculous that they would be sent away for things like having the wrong color belt or the wrong color shoes.
And one of the concerns that we mentioned that the Secretary of Education, the Attorney General, brought up is that they said zero-tolerance policies disproportionately affected African-American students. Why would that be?
Well, what we're finding is that African-American students are disciplined more harshly and more frequently, and not for worse behavior. What the data is showing is that there are disparities on the basis of race. And what this indicates in many instances is that we have a problem with bias in our classrooms. We have a problem with how we are viewing conduct when black and brown youth are the actors.
I've seen at least one response to this from a group saying, well, in society, African Americans disproportionately commit crimes. Maybe they're disproportionately in school doing offenses. You're saying that's not the case. You're saying African-American kid, white kid do the same thing, and the African-American kid likely faces harsher punishment?
That's right. What the guidance that the federal government came out with suggested was that racial disparities are not explained by more frequent or more serious behavior by students of color. So although this perception is out there, it's actually false. Research suggests that kids are kids, but the punishment and the discipline is treated differently on the basis of race.
I was a little surprised, I've got to say, to hear two cabinet officials come out and make this statement. Are you glad to hear such a high-level case against zero tolerance?
Absolutely. I think the statement last week really affirmed what many parents, students, educators, concerned citizens have been saying for some time now, that these policies are having an adverse impact. And I think what was really strong in the statement that came out last week was that you have these two high-level officials of government suggesting that this is feeding a school-to-prison pipeline. When students are not in school, they are more likely to get caught up in the juvenile justice system, and that's where Our work here, for example, at Advancement Project comes into play. I mean, we have been looking at this issue of the school-to-prison pipeline since we opened our doors in 1999, and we know from data that and the real stories of real people that when students are not in the classroom and they are essentially being pushed away from the classroom, it can have a negative impact.
Let's pursue that school-to-prison pipeline concept. What do you mean by that?
So the school-to-prison pipeline, it's a phrase that has been coined for some time now, but it refers to policies and practices that exist in schools, such as zero tolerance, suspensions or expulsions for minor behavior, police in schools, when police, for instance, are used as disciplinarians and not law enforcement officers. But it is the practice and policies that lead to students being pushed out of school. After the tragic incident in Columbine in the late 90s, what we started to see was a over-reliance on police in schools and punitive discipline policies. And, you know, the intent was this is what's needed to make our schools safer, but it ended up having an adverse impact on the young people that we were talking about, black and brown youth, students with disabilities. And when you have law enforcement officers inside of school who are there not in their role as a law enforcement officer, but there as a disciplinarian, what tends to happen is you find kids being arrested for minor things, and they're used as the front line of defense when it comes to misbehavior.
Let's take an example of an African-American student, say, who goes through life in that school-to-prison pipeline. Can you just kind of talk us through what things might look like at each step that take him from school into incarceration?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I think about all of the different parent advocates who I've worked with over the years, and it's interesting that this pipeline starts at a very early age. It could start from something as simple as, this kid in my class won't sit still. There needs to be some sort of punishment or some sort of response to have that child sit still. We see that sometimes happening at as early as six years old. You know, kids getting arrested, for instance, for throwing temper tantrums. In my prior work before coming to Advancement Project, I represented a six-year-old who was handcuffed to a desk because he threw a temper tantrum in the school cafeteria. And what we find is that when, for instance, law enforcement becomes involved in a child's life at such an early age, it puts them on that track to that pipeline. But it happens not just from law enforcement being involved. It happens from that child not being in school. So being suspended for a day or so for talking back in class, being suspended or put out of school because, you didn't wear the right color shirt to school. And we know that if students are out of class, they're more likely to drop out of school, and it's just a domino effect from there.
I can imagine a lot of people maybe in schools saying, this sounds great, but we have to try to guarantee a safe environment for our teachers to teach, the other students to learn. We need to do things that we don't want to do sometimes, tougher discipline, kicking kids out so that everything works for everybody else. Can we do both? Can we keep those kids in school and out of that pipeline and still guarantee safety?
We absolutely can keep kids in school and still ensure a safe environment. You know, one of the things that this Department of Education guidance calls for are fostering safe and positive school climates. One way that it talks about doing that is ensuring that you have the appropriate support team, school-based counselors, social workers, nurses, psychologists. It can't be, ignored that these are the folks who are trained to assess adolescent teen behavior. They are the ones who are experts when it comes to responses. I think I would also add better support for our educators in the classroom. And I think that we should be putting our heads together to think creatively about how we can keep young people in school and not outside of school.
We're talking to Thena Robinson-Mock with the Advancement Project. She's project director of the ending the schoolhouse to jailhouse track campaign. We're talking about zero tolerance policies in schools and how they affect students, especially students of color.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. Are you a parent, a teacher, or a student? What do you think of zero tolerance policies in schools? Do you see rules like this applied unequally in your community? Call in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation now about zero tolerance policies in schools following on White House action last week when the Attorney General and the Education Secretary released guidelines that said schools should steer clear of zero tolerance.
Thena Robinson-Mock is with us. She's with the Advancement Project. She runs a campaign aiming to end the school to jail track. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have zero tolerance policies in the schools in your area? What do you think of the idea? 800-642-1234 is the number, or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go right to the phones now. We've got Colleen with us in Madison. Colleen, hi.
Hi.
What do you think of this?
Well, I completely agree with your guest. I'm a school counselor for an expulsion abeyance program in Madison, and we serve the students who are in the process of being expelled. They come to school with us, unfortunately, only for 3 hours per day, but they come to school with us, and if they're successful with our program, they more than likely can be admitted back into the regular school. And this, you know, we see a lot of what your guest is talking about. The students of color tend to make up a good percentage of the population we serve, and it starts at a very early age. Their discipline referrals, which just end up getting worse and worse as time goes on.
All right. Thanks a lot for sharing the story, Colleen. Thena, first of all, what do you make of that idea? They're expelled, but they still have contact with the school. They're in a program that gives some kind of education and trying to work them back in maybe sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. I applaud programs that focus on how we can get young people back into the school environment. I think what gives us room for pause is when we have schools that put students out with no alternatives. And I think we need to make sure that there are alternatives for folks, for students who are suspended or put out of school, because if we think about all of the hours of instructional time that a young person is missing, you know, how are they to ever get caught up? How can they, you know, return back to the environment and feel confident, feel comfortable that they can move forward? And we also have to treat behaviors, you know, in the appropriate context. These are young people. These are children. These are adolescents. And we have to have that framework in mind when we respond to behavior.
And Thena, Colleen mentioned she's seeing this at an early age. You mentioned a six-year-old being handcuffed to a desk. But what can we do very early on in the school experience, maybe even before, to try to keep kids away from whatever the discipline system is?
Mm-hmm. What we can do is build more positive school climates, and it does start with having the appropriate supportive staff, having the kind of lens that takes a more restorative rather than punitive approach. Restorative practices, for instance, are just one alternative to punitive discipline policies that were outlined in this guidance. And restorative practices, for instance, allow folks to pause, ask questions about what happened, but also get to some sort of a resolution so that the conduct won't happen again and so that young people can actually learn from what happened. Those are the kinds of practices that can start at an early age. But what we know for sure is that simply excluding a young person from the educational environment is not effective.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Sue on the line in Milwaukee. Sue, hi.
Hi. I taught for 33 years. I taught in the regular classroom, and I also coordinated a dropout prevention program. And I'm all for kids staying in school and learning. That's the part of my job that I loved. But what I'm hearing the person say is just not really what happened in my experience in over 30 years or any other teachers I know in several districts.
Meaning you didn't see this kind of discipline, Sue?
No, not even remotely close to this. There were some serious infractions, and virtually very little would happen.
Got it. Sue, thanks for the call. So, Athena, first of all, I guess zero tolerance didn't make it to every school district in the country, and maybe some in their district say there wasn't enough discipline.
Interesting. Well, if zero tolerance did not make it across the country, then that's probably a good thing. but I think certainly every school district is going to have its own circumstances. I think the data overwhelmingly, though, is pointing to this idea that young people are being excluded for minor infractions. And I would also suggest, too, that one of the things that we are seeing in recent years are a lot of cuts to supportive staff, folks like the counselor who called in just a moment ago. In places like Philadelphia, for example, they had a $400 million budget cut to public schools, but at the same time decided to build a $400 million prison. And I think what we're seeing in different cash-strapped districts across the country and different communities is that it is a crisis, and that we don't have a system of equality when it comes to how we are treating young people, particularly black and brown youth.
Thanks for the call, Sue. We'll go next to Sam in Oconomowoc. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi. I had more than a few instances with the zero tolerance policy. I was in more than a few fights in high school and middle school, and the majority of them were just me defending myself, and our school's policy was if you are involved in a fight, whether you instigate it, fight back and defend yourself, or even just curl up in a ball and do nothing, you are given the same punishment as the person who instigated the fight. And then in other instances, I did instigate the fight because people were, most of the time it was defending special needs students that people were picking on. And I was treated exactly the same as someone who just started a fight arbitrarily.
And how long were you kicked out of school in these instances, Sam?
Anywhere from 3 to 5 days.
Sam, thanks a lot for sharing your story. And now my memory is a little dim of the era of my high school, but I seem to remember kids got in fights. They might be out for a day, and we'd see them later in the week. Have things changed that much, Athena?
You know, school fights are going to happen. And I think I really appreciate the caller's comment because, you know, I think he said a couple of things that really stand out to me. You know, it sounds like there weren't any questions asked. And that's the problem with zero tolerance, is that if something happens on the school grounds that violates a school rule, no questions are asked, students are just put out. But what the alternatives and what the evidence suggests is that if we take some time to ask questions, get both sides of the story, not excuse behavior or not have consequences or accountability for young people, but actually take the time for students to learn from what happened while keeping them in school, you have better results. And that's where restorative practices come in, which is a conflict resolution method that allows all students involved and even educators who might be involved in the incident to hear each other out and come up with a resolution for moving forward.
Sam, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Mary Lou in Rockton, Illinois. Mary Lou, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I have 4 kids. They are all long since out of school, but when my son was in high school, I did go to school with him several times, honestly, because he got in so much trouble. I wanted to embarrass him, and I attended school with him, and I was shocked at how really rude and disruptive a lot of the students were and how very unkind they were to the teachers. But with that said, I also feel that some of the zero tolerance policies are absolutely out of control. And a case in point is my daughter, who 5 years ago was suspended from school for a week because she had a plastic knife in her lunch bag so she could cut some of the food that I had sent for school that day. And I kind of thought, you know, you got some really bigger issues going on in the classroom, and you're going to kick my kid out for a week because she has a plastic piece of silverware.
Thanks for sharing that story, Mary Lou. And Athena, hold on. I want to go to one more caller. We've got Clara in Milwaukee. Clara, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. A great concern is the fact that the implementation of zero tolerance policies are so uneven across the board, and because they also lend themselves to what one would think of as personal biases and prejudices that teachers and others in authority may have, and can indeed use this policy to simply get rid of a student who is a nuisance or a student that they simply cannot accept for whatever reason. So I would think that hopefully they would have tested this policy so that many of these questions could have been answered, and this policy could have been implemented in such a way that it was really effective in terms of solving and bringing solutions to problems.
Clara, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on that. Thina, in our just last minute and a half or so, are we seeing a movement away from zero tolerance, and what do you see replacing it now?
We are seeing a movement away from zero tolerance. You know, 15 years ago, that was the rule of the day. And now, you know, to have DOE, Department of Justice officials coming out saying, you know, zero tolerance is something we need to move away from is a big deal. We know for a fact that there are communities around the country who are working hard to bring in alternatives. And, you know, we can get this done. There are families, parents, young people who care deeply about these issues because they know it's the impact. So we are seeing something different, and I'm confident that we will see a shift in the tide going forward.
Thina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Thina Robinson-Mock. She is project director of the Ending the Schoolhouse to Jailhouse Track campaign at the group The Advancement Project.